section that's describing the mature stages of bhakti, because from the previous section we heard that Vedeshu Durlabham Adurlabham Atma Bhaktam. Simply through academic effort, study of the Vedas even, not possible to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Govinda, but he's understandable through bhakti. And the goal is reaching the lotus feet and loving devotional service. So this section that we're studying, and this is the final verse of the section, 36, 37, and this one, 38. The mature stages of bhakti. In '36, there was a description of Bhava Bhakti. And in the Bhava Bhakti stage, there's some indication of one's relationship with Krishna and the beginnings of a sense of one's conveyances and one's residence and ornaments and the details of one's particular relationship with Krishna in one of five different rasas. And then we began a very delicate subject, the relationship of Radha and Krishna in terms of rasa, and the expansions of Radha as her sakis or confidants, and we'll continue that tomorrow morning. So Bhava Bhakti, Prema Bhakti, specifically the Radha Krishna loving relationship, and then this verse is how in this very elevated state one can actually see Krishna, as Lord Brahma saw Krishna and described Krishna in different ways. His abode, his form, his pastimes. One can see these things, and how is as described in this verse. And it was mentioned this earlier, but it's one of the verses that Srila Prabhupada quoted perhaps more than any other verse in Brahma Samhita, or at least amongst his favorites. So let us chant this verse together. The sound's going to work? Yes. We'll find out.
Yom Shama Shunda Vajinda Guna Swaruma Govinda Vani Purusha Amaham Vajami Govinda Vani Purusha Amaham Vajami.
If anybody has one of those nice little devices called a cell phone, please turn it into the vibrate or off position. Thank you. And the translation, I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, who is Shama Sundara, Krishna himself, with inconceivable attributes, whom the pure devotees see in their heart of hearts with the eye of devotion tinged with the salve of love. I can just reciting this verse I'm thinking of the hundreds and hundreds of times I've heard Prabhupada describe this. Hearing from him the meaning of Anjana. Those of you from India, you know very well what Anjana is, but somebody from America, what's Anjana? You say it's an appointment, like a cosmetic. But it's not a cosmetic you can go to the pharmacy and get. It's Premanjana. Kmart and Walmart and Walgreens, they don't have any for sale. But it's available, as we've been hearing, through the cultivation of bhakti. And cultivation of bhakti in its mature stage comes to this bhava bhakti and then prema bhakti stage. We didn't correct the fonts, but at least I can read it. So, in the purport of this verse, you have a book, you can see if I've got it right. There's this first sentence that says, the Shama Sundara form of Krishna is his inconceivable simultaneous personal and impersonal self-contradictory form. What does that mean? Get out your dictionary. And even easier, there's a very nice explanation that comes from Jiva Goswami's commentary to Brahma Samhita, not on this text, 38, but now quoting directly from the translation of his Sanskrit commentary on text 40. The personal and impersonal aspects are actually only one form. How is that? By a manifestation of the Lord with qualities, the form called Govinda, who is the possessor of various attributes, Dharmi, appears. Krishna with qualities. By manifestation of the Lord devoid of qualities, his form as his attribute or dharma is called Brahman appears. This Brahman is like the halo around the moon. So what was that? Here's the moon, and there's the halo around the moon. And the moon and the halo around the moon are one entity. Again, this is Bhakti said, we're not used to using entity. Bhakti Siddhanta, we would say a thing. He uses entity. So it's an entity, it's a unit. The moon and the halo around the moon. So there's the without qualities and with qualities. Nirguna and Saguna. Brahman. Krishna is with qualities, and they're transcendental qualities, not the temporary kind, transient qualities, limited qualities. What's the word he's been using? Unwholesome qualities, qualities that deteriorate. Krishna's qualities are not like that. They're all wholesome and eternal and pure and full of knowledge and bliss. So his saguna and nirguna aspects, they're actually one entity. As the moon and the halo around the moon is one entity. That's what he's stating at first. So how can one have love for light? Answer. You don't have love for light, it's you maybe appreciate, but love is there's a relationship. There's a person and another person, like we were discussing earlier today. The object and the subject, the one who is feeling love and the one who is one is feeling love towards, the abode of love and the object of that love. There's two persons. Without person, there's no love. It requires two. So Krishna is the object of love. And in the Brahman realization, that aspect of Krishna, we don't find love, and we don't find qualities that stimulate love. It's homogenized Brahman, homogeneous light. So the Shama, back to the statement, the Shama Sundara form of Krishna is his inconceivable simultaneous personal and impersonal self-contradictory form. Krishna includes his halo. The effulgence from Krishna is part of Krishna. It's not there's a halo and then there's Krishna, or there's effulgence and there's Krishna, like the other description of this form. You know, the limb of Krishna is not like he has a limb. Remember that discussion? Like we have an arm. But you know, you can sever your arm and you still exist. You may be armless. Or to, you know, put another one on. I'll figure it out. You have prosthesis, maybe they'll figure out an arm donor program, and some of you donate that arm and sew one on, and there you go. Anyway, we have limbs, but Krishna doesn't have limbs. He is his body. There's no distinction between the object and the possessor of the object, as far as Krishna is concerned. And same for his halo. Anyway, so to love Krishna, we love his halo too. Because it's an aspect of him. They're inseparable. So, the translation, Premanjana Charita Bhakti Lalochanena, means, with the eye of devotion tinged with the anjana, the salve, or ointment, or the cosmetic, the salve of love. So we just go get some, squeeze the end of the tube, put some on our finger, and go, now we can see Krishna. But rather, from the heart, the seat of where the soul is within the heart, when the soul becomes jubilant and feeling the ecstatic happiness of being in one's relationship of service with Krishna, the soul jubilates. It oozes with this anjana, not divided at the store. It's from within. And we'll see how Bhaktisiddhanta describes it. Santaksa daiva hridayeshu vilokiyanti. The pure devotees see in their heart of hearts. What happened? Oh, there we go. I have two computers, that one and this one. So here on the right hand side we see Rupa and Sanatan Goswami sitting beneath a tree, engaged in Krishna Katha, one writing, one reading and reciting, and sound vibration in relation to Krishna. And what's within their heart as they're so engaged is the flow, like the river flows, the flowing of Krishna's pastimes. Not just, you know, a still picture, but a motion picture. A motion picture where it's not just a picture, it's life, and they enter into that. You remember that sva rasaki stage of devotion in the hearts of those who are fixed, absorbed in prema. And then on the left hand side is a spiritual master. To me it looks something close to like Srila Prabhupada, and he's instructing his disciple And from within that love quality within his heart, he's passing on through that sound vibration to his disciple. So within the hearts, the heart of their hearts. So the Sanskrit is hridayeshu, in their hearts. And Bhakti Siddhanta explains this. What does this mean, in their hearts? Anticipating that some of you might ask that question, Bhakti Siddhanta answers it. The phrase, in their hearts, means Krishna is visible in proportion as their hearts are purified by the practice of devotion. So here's a very nice lila of Krishna and the cowherd boys doing one of their favorite activities, taking butter from the storerooms of the gopis. If you look very carefully in the back, behind that pillar, there's some gopis carrying more butter for Krishna to steal that they put up in the rafters of their storerooms. And down below, there's monkeys. They're very happily eating the remnants. Krishna's handing off some butter to Balaram. They're eagerly receiving it. So these pastimes of Krishna can appear in the hearts of the devotees. This is now quoting directly from Bhakti Siddhanta's purport. The eye of devotion is nothing but the eye of the pure, unalloyed self of the jiva. You can say the eye of the soul. But that's not the language that he's used. Remember, he says what he means and he means what he says. So it's the eye of the pure, unalloyed self of the jiva. Some would think the jiva is the soul, then there's the self. So like, you've heard the expression, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. You've heard that before? Mm-hmm. You've heard that before? Now you've heard it. Beauty is in the eye of the beholder. Prabhupada would sometimes say, parents may have a child who is blind, and they name him Padmalochan, the lotus-eyed Padmalochan, because of the love. Although he's blind, he can't even see, but in their eyes, he's Padmalochan. Beauty is in the eyes of the beholder. So the jiva, the soul, that is experiencing love, prema, toward Krishna, then their unalloyed spiritual self, you can say their personality, even you can say more specifically their rasa, their unique relationship with Krishna, according to that love that they're feeling towards Krishna, they'll see. You with me? I'm making a slight distinction between the language of the soul and the pure unalloyed self which Bhakti Siddhanta has given. There's a nice one of the many nice verses in Srimad Bhagavatam, very famous verse, is when Krishna is entering the wrestling arena of Kamsa. Very beautiful verse. Krishna has just finished, along with Balaram, smashing Kulayapida, huge, biggest 10 elephants. Huge, monstrous elephant. Broke up, smashed into the ground, broke up his tusks, beat him with a broken tusk, and he died. Then he broke up the other tusk and gave it to Balaram. Here, this one's for you. And they come striding, 12-year-old boys, striding into the wrestling arena with this bloody elephant tusk over their shoulder. And as they're walking into the wrestling arena, according to the pure, unalloyed spiritual self of their soul, or as they had regard for Krishna, that's how they see Krishna. Niyatam mam prapadyante tamas tathaiva bhajami aham. As they bhajami, or they worship Krishna, that's how they see him. So they saw him differently. The impersonalists saw, here comes the impersonal Brahman, something like a perambulatory light somehow moving across the wrestling arena. Some saw Super Soul, the yogis. The elders saw this darling little boy. How unfortunate he has to fight these cruel, big, monstrous wrestlers. Kamsa saw him as death or suicide. And the young girls, is like, darling boy. So according to one's position, in other words, one will see. Beauty is in the eye of the beholder. So the Anjana, the prema anjana, is one product, or one substance, one salve, but according to our heart, it'll decorate the eye of the soul or the eye of the unalloyed pure self in a different way. And he goes on, the form of Krishna is visible to that eye in proportion to the purification, to its purification by the practice of devotion. So how do we get that anjana of prema? We purify the soul, the self, the unalloyed self, by the practice. We do sadhana to come to the bhava and prema stage, exactly as Rupa Goswami describes in Nectar of Devotion. Then he writes, when the devotion of the neophyte reaches the stage of bhava bhakti, the pure eye of that devotee is tinged with the salve of love by the grace of Krishna, which enables him to see Krishna face to face. So if you want to see Krishna, become a pure devotee. And when you're a pure devotee, you can see Krishna face to face. That's, of course, if Krishna wishes to disclose himself. Sometimes Krishna hides himself. And when one has that kind of attachment for Krishna, we know from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings, yugayatam nimeshena chakshusha pravasayatam. It's described that when the cowherd boys were in the forest of Vrindavan, they're so attached to Krishna that even a moment of not seeing Krishna was like ages. Sometimes they'd be going through a forest and they were on one side of a tree and Krishna was on the other side of a tree. And then they can see Krishna again. So attached. That kind of love. Transcendental love. Nice graphic where one can see, not with these eyes, but with the eyes of the unalloyed self. One can see the form of Krishna. Specifically, it's mentioned within the heart. Just like this wonderful painting of Prabhupada, while he is seeing the world outside, he's seeing Krishna within. There's a very nice example of this. Two examples. One time a reporter asked Srila Prabhupada, Swamiji, have you seen God? That was a common question that was asked. So Prabhupada's reply was, if I told you, would you believe me? And the reporter was a little taken aback and said, yes, surely I'll believe you. And then Prabhupada said, not only I have seen God, but I am seeing him all the time. Now do you believe me? Oh yes, Swamiji, I'm seeing him all the time. Because love isn't intermittent, love is steady, incessant. And the nature of the soul that's attached to Krishna, their thoughts are always with Krishna. In fact, they are always with Krishna. Not only their thoughts are with Krishna. So one time Prabhupada was speaking in his quarters in Los Angeles. He had just arrived. There was this big fanfare arrangement at the airport to receive him, and limousine, and came back to the temple, greeted the deities at the temple, and was taken to his quarters, and Prabhupada was sitting in his room with all the devotees, so enlivened because they hadn't seen Prabhupada in some time. And Prabhupada was sharing with them, "I know that you are always talking about me. Swamiji, now he's in India, and he's doing these things. And you send the messages back and forth. Prabhupada did this and did that. Then Prabhupada is going to Tokyo. He's going to speak at such and such place, and he did these things, those things. And then Prabhupada went to Australia and New Zealand, and they installed deities in Melbourne, and then he went to Hawaii, and soon he'll be arriving in Los Angeles. And now I have come, but you should know that I'm always with Krishna. Although externally it may appear I'm in these different places, I'm always with Krishna." That was his message, one of his messages. So, like his painting is illustrating. Yang Shama Sundaram Achintya Guna Sarupam. His form of Shama Sundara. Shama, we discussed, is darkish, or like a monsoon cloud, fresh monsoon cloud, Shama, who has inconceivable qualities and transcendental form. Here's the conclusion of Bhaktisiddhanta to this verse. The sum and substance of this shloka is that the form of Krishna, who is Shama Sundara, Natavara, the best dancer, Murlidhara, the holder of the flute, and Tribhanga, triple bending, Bhaktisiddhanta, is not a mental concoction, but is transcendental and is visible with the eye of the soul of the devotee under trance. So here's Shama Sundara, or actually this is the deity Radha Shama Sundara in Vrindavan. And here's a photograph of the deity of Govindaji in Jaipur. The deity that Rupa Goswami worshipped in Vrindavan is now being worshipped in Jaipur. Govindam Adi Purusha Tamaham Bhajami. So we're going to cover the next verse. Meanwhile, could you find in your nice little device, your Nexus or whatever it is, Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Lila chapter 5 text 36. So that finishes our section, and we're ready for the next section. And the next section runs through verses 39 through 42. We're just going to cover this evening 39, and tomorrow morning we'll cover 40, 41, and 42. So please remember this introduction. We'll do it again tomorrow morning. So after describing these higher stages of devotion, there's a step back. Brahma steps back and discusses now more of the tattva, or the truths about Krishna. Because if you remember, before these prayers began, it is stated by Brahma that he became well acquainted with the ocean of truth. So this is part of the ocean of truth, or tattva, about Krishna. And specifically, this section is the fact that Krishna is the basis and the support of all existence, literally everything, spiritual, material, everything, everything that exists, Krishna is. The Sanskrit word is pratishtha. Pratishtha. Lots of Sanskrit words in this course. Just when we install a deity, those of you from India, you're very familiar. Pran pratishtha. That's what you call a deity installation. Pran is like life air. Pranayama, the breathing exercises of yoga. Pran pratishtha is installing the deity form of Krishna. And in Bhagavad Gita, the word pratishtha is also found, where Krishna says he is the pratishtha of Brahman, chapter 14, toward the end, I think verse 27 or 28, chapter 14, about the modes of nature. Krishna is the pratishtha of Brahman. Brahmano hi pratishtha aham. Now, what does pratishtha mean? Pratishtha means the basis and foundation, that which supports everything. So, like the rays of the sun is the pratishtha of the rays. They're inseparable, but the rays come from the sun. Or, you know, in a more in a practical sense, not in an existential sense, we're sitting on, well, most of you are sitting on a rug, and the rug is resting on the floor, and the floor is resting on the beam, the beams are resting on the foundation is resting on the earth, and you keep going and going and going and going, and you know, the hoods of Anantashesha are holding up the universes, and Anantashesha is a manifestation of Krishna. You're resting on Krishna. Krishna is the pratishtha. He's the basis and support. So these four verses are saying Krishna is the pratishtha, or the basis and support of literally everything. And in four verses, it covers part of everything. It covers all the avatars. That's what we're going to do just now. He is the pratishtha, or the source of emanation, of all avatars. He is the basis and support of the Brahman effulgence, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita also. That's the next verse. He is the basis and support of all material existence. And you'll hear this phrase again, but it's sattva avalambi. You'll hear it again. Sattva avalambi. Sattva, we know, goodness. Avalambi. Sattva avalambi is the support of all existence. And he's the support of all rasa finding. So, we're going to be covering just the first of those verses. Krishna is the basis and support of all avatars. So let us, there's the four. And let us chant the verse together for text
39.
Now, note that in the Sanskrit, I highlighted purposely Kala Niyamena and Svayam Samabhavat. And the reason is that Jiva Goswami, in his commentary, before I read the translation, was just look at those two words, two terms. He indicates these have special importance in this verse. You can see in the word for word below, Kala Niyamena is by the order of plenary portions. So here's what Jiva Goswami writes in his commentary. This Kala Niyamena means the Supreme Person called Krishna appears in the worlds by revealing various forms, such as Rama, displaying powers fixed according to the particular form. So there's two different words, Kala and Kala. Kala means time. And that's not what this word, this is Kala. Kala, Prabhupada is translated as a portion of a plenary portion. What does that mean? It means Krishna expands as Balaram. So that's a direct expansion. Krishna, Balaram, direct expansion. Balaram is not different than Krishna, except his color is white, and Krishna's is Shyama, blackish. So, then when Balaram expands, those expansions of Balaram, although they're the same tattva, the same potency, they're to distinguish one, you know, the candle that's lit from the one that was lit, it has another term. Kala is the portion of a plenary portion. So this is describing the expansions or the avatars in this world. They're in the category of Kala and Niyama. Niyama, it means rule and regulation. Like, you know, at a New York Rath Yatra, one Jewish lady was in the question and answer booth, and after the question and answer session, she came up and said, in your organization, do you have any rules that you have to follow? We don't follow. I said, sure. And, you know, we have these four that we follow, but there's many others that we follow according to, you know, one's psychophysical nature, the things that we follow. Sannyasis, renunciates, they follow something, and householders, they follow another something. There's niyamas. That's what a niyama is. It's a rule and regulation. So, kala, niyamena, according to the particular Rama, Nrisimha, Varaha, Matsya, Kurma, according to their position, they are awarded they display various powers. Kala niyamena, that's the meaning. And those kala, and the powers of those kalas, they're from Krishna. That's the message. Then this other term is Swayam Samabhavat. So Krishna's two Bhagavans, Swayam. Remember that one? In fact, it's in this verse, it's also Krishna Swayam Samabhat Parama Pramanyo. So this is indicating the original form of Krishna. That Paribhasa Sutra, if you were here for the first class on Wednesday evening, you remember that term? Paribhasa Sutra. So it's the verse that is the essence of and the ruling verse of a whole work, like Srimad Bhagavatam, 18,000 verses is ruled by one. And in that one, it's stating Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam. Swayam means himself. Krishna himself. Krishna is the Swayam Bhagavan, is the original personality of Godhead. It's the source of everything. So the Swayam Samabhavat means, in addition to sending avatars into the world, sometimes Krishna comes himself. He who is the source of all avatars sometimes appears as an avatar, or appears within this world, you descend within this world. So that's what this verse is saying. So let's go to the translation. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, who manifested himself personally as Krishna. Beautiful painting, huh? And the different avatars in the world, in the forms of Ramana, Sringavama, etc., as his subjective portions. So this is Bhaktisiddhanta's language. Prabhupada was a portion of a plenary portion, which means the same thing as subjective portions, which means Krishna's expansions. It's just language to identify which type, which, you know, of which category. That's all. So, we're reviewing what the purport says. Krishna manifests himself within Raja in this world. He descends from the Goloka realm into this realm and manifests his wonderful pastimes. But in addition, so if you read the purport, you'll find there's this discussion. In addition to Krishna's own pastimes, here's one of his boat pastimes, cruising with the gopis along the river Jamuna, with different ghats, with gopis waiting to serve Krishna in different ways. There are other categories of Krishna appearing in this world, and these are the categories of avatar. Interesting, isn't it, how these Sanskrit words are becoming part of the Western culture? I just saw a thing, Avatar 2. And the same director has a plan for Avatar 3, too. So people will think, I know what Avatar means. Avatar means that blue guy that lives on whatever the planet is. So anyway, that's not me. Avatar means one who descends from the spiritual realm into this realm and encourages souls of this realm to become attracted to the spiritual realm again. Attract the hearts and the minds of those in this realm to him. So there's six categories. If we had more time, I'd do the little thing of ask you to raise your hand and say one, and then we get all six, and then we all applaud, we got all six. But we don't have the time to do it, so we'll do it this way. Purusha avatars. Those of you that attended the seminar last year, we certainly discussed the Purusha avatars. They're the forms of Vishnu who manifest the universe. So they appear in the universe to manifest the universe. Purusha avatars. That's the Mahavishnu, Karmadakshaya Vishnu, and Shirodakshaya Vishnu, the three Vishnus who carry out the process of creation. Then another very well known, maybe more known to people in the world when they hear about avatars, the Lila avatars. In fact, there's 10 or Dasa avatars that are most famous. And that painting that I showed earlier, all of them are Lila avatars. That's the second of six categories. Then, also very well known, are the Guna avatars. Guna avatars means they're in charge of the modes of nature. The Gunas, good dispassion, ignorance, have in charge of them Lord Vishnu, Lord Brahma, the creator, engages emotive passion to create, and Lord Shiva, the mode of ignorance, the mode of destruction. It's really, I mean, if you had to be God and you had to like make a plan to make a creation, it's really a really practical way to do it. Something that brings something into being, something that sustains things, and something that just takes things out of being. Real practical. You want to be a creator, this is a good way to do it. And then while the creation is operating, the modes of nature are operating. And when you want to like stop it, you just pull back the time energy and the modes of nature fall flat and the whole thing collapses. It goes back into an unmanifest state. It's really practical. So, guna avatars. And then, the next that's mentioned in this purport is manvantara avatars, as in the manus. You will, if you research carefully like I did, you'll find there's two different descriptions of the manu avatars. One, you see the reference from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, it's each manu himself, that's an avatar. So there's 14 manus, and every day Brahma, and they have a name, and each one of them, the position is established by Krishna as they appear in this world on his behalf. The manus themselves. And then, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, you see the reference, it's a long series of verses, where it describes during each manu, there's a particular form that's the avatar for that manu. So if you happen to have looked it up like I did, you would know who is the avatar for this particular manu, where the duration of the manu number 7, or Vaivasvata manu, and the Manvantara avatar for our manu is Vamana. And you can go to the Chaitanya Charitamrita and find this other list. So that's number 4 out of 6. 2 more to go. What's another one? Huh? We're going to do Shakti Beach last. So what's the sixth one? Yuga avatar. Very good. During each yuga, for those of you that are a little newer, the ages of mankind are in cycles, just like the seasons. It's cold. It's winter season. Seems like in Seattle it rains no matter what the season is. But summer, fall, winter, spring, rain. So anyway.
Only one season.
One season, rain season. Okay. So there's, as seasons rotate, at least they do where I come from. The ages of mankind also. They are in cycles. And in each of those four cycles or yugas, there's an avatar generally who appears towards the beginning or at the beginning of that particular yuga, and he establishes a yuga dharma or the primary means of attaining spiritual perfection for that particular age. So these are yuga avatars. So now, avatar category number 6. We got a whole page for this one. This comes from Chaitanya Charitamrita, as you see the reference, Madhya Lila, chapter 20. This is Lord Chaitanya's instructions to Sanatana Goswami, where he says that Shaktivesha avatars, this sixth category, there's divisions. Some are Bhagavat Avesh, where there's divine absorption. Kapila Dev and Rishabh Dev are examples. And then there's divinely empowered. It doesn't make it a clear distinction, so please don't ask me, between A and B. But divinely empowered, that's commonly how we're introduced to Shakti Vaishnavatara, a living entity. Or, you'll see in the first two of the examples, they're Vishnu Tattva forms. So let's go down the list. Sa Sevana Shakti. So, a living entity in this case, the example is Sheshanag in the Vaikuntha world. He's empowered by Narayana to do some seva, the service. He serves Lord Narayana by manifesting everything, all his paraphernalia, his chair, his shoes, his umbrella, his Brahmin thread, all of his, every ornaments, everything. Everything is manifest by Sheshanav. He does his swaseva through the swaseva shakti. Then, bhu dharana. Dharana means to hold, like, you know, Krishna holds the chakra. So, he's the what's the chakradhari, the holder of the conch, or the holder of the disc. Anyway, dharana is holding, and bhul is the earth or the planets. So, Anantashesh holds the planets. Within each universe, at the bottom, there's a form of Ananta. And Ananta holds the planets. He does his bhul dharana activity. The potency of creation, Srishti Shakti, that's a potency given to Lord Brahma. So notice, Lord Brahma is one living entity can be in more than one category. Example, Lord Brahma. He's a guna avatar, and he's also a Shakti Vish avatar. And Shakti Vish in the Srishti Shakti, the creative potency, the fullness of the Lord's creative potency is invested in Lord Brahma. So, Jnana Shakti, commonly we know the four Kumaras as like that. And some devotees like these details. So, in Rupa Goswami's writing, in Bhagavatamrita, he includes Vyasadeva. We say, Vyasadeva is a literary incarnation of Krishna. It's in this category. Jnana Shakti. Only he writes it, not just he knows it. He's empowered in that way. Narada Muni is empowered by the Lord's Bhakti Shakti. The fullness of the Lord's devotion potency is carried by Narada. He's very powerful. And just two more. Ruling potency, Palana Shakti, is carried by or invested in Prithu. So except for one and two, these are all jivas that are given the fullness of the Lord's potency. They act like the Lord. Therefore, they're considered avatars, although they're jivas, they're living entities. And Lord Parashuram, he has his own special category. Dushta Dhamana Shakti. He smashes down the rascals. Dushta Dhamana. That is big chopper. Chops. Powered incarnation. Now, just a little from our acharyas here that give support to these statements, because you just made some very interesting statements, is there scriptural support for them? Here's one from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, where Devaki, this is towards the end of the 10th canto, where Devaki has heard all about Krishna brought back the dead son of his teacher. Who was his teacher? Sandipani Muni. So Sandipani Muni wanted that dakshin, so he brought it back. And Devaki heard these miracles that Krishna had done, so kind of shyly, she asked, "Can you bring back my six children that died just after they were born? Hamsa killed them. I'd like to have them back, please." So in that section, chapter 85, she speaks of Krishna recognizing his divinity by this verse. She says, "O Lord Krishna, O all-pervading Super Soul, you are the original personality of Godhead by a tiny fragment of a part of a part of a part of a portion of your potency. The material universes are created and annihilated. Again, I surrender unto you and take shelter of you." So these are functions of the Purusha avatars. Krishna is the source of the Purusha avatars. She knows that. And this is like a little bonus. But in his Krishna Sandarbha, here's what Jiva Goswami quotes. He quotes a commentary by Sridhar Swami, where he gets, you know, what is this? A part, a portion of your potency. So he goes into detail and he says, in the verse, Devaki is saying that Vishnu is a amsa or portion of Mahavishnu. Mahavishnu is Krishna's amsa, sometimes also kala. And the portion of the Purusha avatar from Mahavishnu, there's the illusory energy. She is the reflection of his internal potency. We discussed this in the previous seminar, the previous earlier verses of Brahma Samhita, the creation verses, that earlier section. So, the illusory energy is a portion of Mahavishnu, who is a portion of Lord Vishnu, Lord Krishna. And a portion of the illusory energy is the modes of nature. And just a small part of the total potency of material nature, the whole material universes are created, maintained, and destroyed. The modes of nature do this, create, maintain, and destroy. Passion, goodness, and ignorance. In this way, by a portion of a portion of a portion of a portion of the Lord's potency, the material world is created. Ta-da. So, Krishna is very powerful. And he's the source of all the verses, he's the source of all incarnations. We're almost done. Connecting this verse, Krishna is the basis and support of all incarnations. Jiva Goswami, in his commentary, he refers to the section of Srimad Bhagavatam where Lord Brahma, chapter 14 of 10th canto, Lord Brahma is offering prayers to Krishna. Where he says, "Are you not the original Narayana? O Supreme Controller, since you are the soul of every embodied being and the eternal witness of all created realms, indeed, Lord Narayana is your expansion. And he is called Narayana because he is the generating source of the primeval water of the universe. He is real, not a product of your illusory Maya. Anyway, this is... it's... our acharyas appreciate, and maybe you can also, these subtle points. It's a subtle point. If you're tired, it'll just go right past you. What's this person talking about? But it's a subtle point. And it, the subtle point is, you remember that picture, Lord Brahma is bowing his head before Krishna, and Krishna is standing beneath a tree, holding his lump of yogurt and some fruit in his hand. And Brahma is offering these prayers, saying, the little boy, Krishna, you are Narayan. And in response, Krishna says, my dear Lord Brahma, please consider what you're saying. Narayana is your source, and you're elder to me, and I'm this little boy, and you're saying, I am Narayan? Please consider. And then Krishna in reply, or Brahma in reply says, you certainly are Narayan. Narayan is your expansion, and he's called Narayan because he's a generating source, this primal water that's the causal ocean. From him expands Mahavishnu, and from Mahavishnu comes the causal ocean, and all the universes are floating in the causal ocean, and it's your expansion that's within all those universes and within the heart of every living being. Certainly you're Narayan. Jiva Goswami in his commentary explains the elements of creation that arise from the Lord, or Nara, are known by the wise as Nara. So the elements are Nara, and they arise from Nara. The shelter of these elements, which exist previous to them, is called Ayana. So the Purusha avatar is also Narayana. It's subtle. And if you're tired, subtle doesn't mean anything. Narayana is in Vaikuntha, normally. The Lord of Vaikuntha, Lakshmi Narayana. Here's Brahma subtly expressing to Krishna that, well, the Purusha avatars, we can also call the Purusha avatars Narayana because they are the shelter, the ayana, of the elements. Nara. And so Lord Vishnu is also Narayana, and you are the source of Narayana and Vishnu, so you're also Narayana. You're my father. Get it? Brahma is, you know, the creator of the universe, and here's this little boy. And he's saying, you're my father. And Krishna, the little boy, is saying, my dear Brahma, please consider what you're saying. Just a little boy. We're just 5-6 years old, and you're saying, I'm your father. Please consider what you're saying. Oh, it's true. I'll prove it. Now he's proving it. Nice. Thus, Brahma states that Narayana is an expansion, and Krishna is the source. That's who I'm making reference. The Gita also says, Vishtabhyam idam kritsnam ekam sena stato jagat. At the end of the opulences listed by Krishna, in the opulences of the Absolute chapter, Krishna says, by one of my expansions, the Purusha, I am firmly established in the universe in this way. Anyway, etymology, meaning of Krishna, has again been shown to be true since he is the basis of Narayana. Anyway. Here is some very nice paintings of the different avatars. In the upper left corner, Lord Vamana. In the lower left, Lord Rama. And in the right, this nice Lakshmi Nrisimha. And Varaha and Matsya. And this is our last slide. Krishna Chaitanya, this is taken from Bhaktisiddhanta's purport. Krishna Chaitanya, identical with Krishna himself, also brings about, by his appearance, the direct manifestation of Godhead himself, that Krishna Swayam Sabhava. Sometimes Krishna sends avatars, sometimes Krishna comes himself. When Krishna Chaitanya comes, it's another Krishna comes himself. Example. And the picture on the left, and the top, is Krishna himself. And the bottom is Krishna himself with Radha. Those two forms as one entity, and the bottom is the two forms, or it's one entity, where both forms are in one form. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Same as the upper right. Okay, so ta-da, we're done. So we've covered this evening verse 30. I'm feeling a little pressure for time. I don't know about all of you, but I'm looking at this, how am I going to cover all these verses, because they're so nice and so much to say, volumes and volumes, and this time goes tick-tock, tick-tock, it keeps moving. So we're gonna be moving a little faster. I hope you don't mind. Hope you have a good seatbelt, fasten your seatbelt. We're just gonna go in the fast lane from here on. Any comments or questions? Yes. Here's the microphone. It's on.
You said Parshuram is a Shakya-based avatar?
Yes.
But he's also one of the Dash avatars, so he's also a real avatar, right?
Yeah.
So,
I said it can be more than one. Oh. Remember which one I gave as an example? Yeah. And Parshuram is another. There's some other ones too. Yeah. Yeah. Those personalities, like Srila Prabhupada, and Prabhupada in his writings, he also included Christ and Muhammad as Shaktivesh avatars. Uniquely empowered to carry the Lord's bhakti, Shakti. Shaktivesh avatar.
But there were seven categories. Which one do you want to talk
about? Bhakti Shakti. Yes.
Is Parshuram Vishnu Tattva? Or is he not?
As far as I know, Jiva Tattva. As far as I know. I can research it.
So, Jiva Tattva is also a Leela avatar?
Who?
So, Parshuram is a Jiva Tattva, but it's also a Leela avatar. So, Jiva
Tattva. Because he's already in a category of an empowered incarnation. Let me research it. It's certainly doable. Krishna can do whatever he wants. But whether he's in the category of Vishnu Tattva or Jiva Tattva, I'd have to research. Can't say. Anything else? Oh, in the back.
Allows me to connect to the back, so I'm just taking the question here. There's a question from Madhavi Mataji. She asks, what is the difference between Narayan and Vishnu?
Function. Narayana presides in Vaikuntha. Vishnu performs the function of creation in the material world. Narayana resides in the Vaikuntha realm. Vishnu resides, at least his abode is manifest, it's a spiritual abode, but manifest in the material region. For the function of creation, primarily, is the distinction. Vishnu is an expansion of, more technically, the expansion of Sankarshan of Vaikuntha region. But we can say he's an expansion of Narayana in Vaikuntha region for the purpose of creation. That's his function. Anything else? Okay. Yes, another one.
Yes, there's one more, Maharaj, from Prajari Prabhu. He says, Lord Buddha is one of the dasavatars, but Buddhists do not believe in God per se. How do we explain that?
Because he didn't teach about God. That's how we explain it. How do we explain that? Lord Buddha specifically, his in the Srimad Bhagavatam, his purpose for appearance is identified by Vyasadeva to bewilder the atheists. So in bewildering the atheists, he didn't teach about God. He taught about at least one specific godly principle, the principle of nonviolence. So because he didn't teach about God, there's no, his teaching, although he's an avatar, his teaching is atheistic. Dattatreya is another. Anyway, he was carrying out a function on behalf of the Supreme Lord. Yes, Mataji, you have the microphone?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. In Shakti Avaisha avatars, you said two categories. One is divine absorption, which is Bhagavad-Avish.
Yes.
Can you give me one example?
Yeah, there's two examples. Lord Kapila and Rishabhdev.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes.
Thanks, Maharaj. Maharaj, why is there a lot of contradiction in who is the source of all the incarnations, even within the Vaishnava traditions, like different schools of thoughts? Some say that Narayana is a source of,
sure,
and here it's quite clear that Krishna is the source, but why is there this contradiction?
Well, it depends. Take the microphone. It depends on your means of proof or pramana. You familiar with that term? Pramana? Pramana? Looking around, some nods or heads are nodding yes. I don't see any going like this. Pramana means evidence. If you want to prove something, they say like in the courtroom, the precedent law is evidence. When a lawyer wants to prove a case, he cites law. So, for those in spiritual circles that want to establish something, one must make some reference to scripture. So, for certain groups of Vaishnavas, particularly, let's say, Sri Vaishnavas, very prominent, they refer to primarily Vishnu Purana and Padma Purana. That's their principal evidence. And in those, they state clearly Narayana is the source of Vishnu, and the avatars are avatars of Vishnu. So, for them, that's the evidence. Narayana is supreme. They have no problem seeing that Krishna and Rama and Nrisimha, they worship them. these are the dasavatars, they worship them. But in their scripture, the primary source of evidence for them, Narayana is the source. And their avatars are the source. That's sufficient for them. Srimad Bhagavatam explicitly states that Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam. Krishna is the source. I could give an explanation. Well, I will give an explanation. But, you know, the most important thing is to answer your question, why are there differences? There are different sources of evidence. The followers of Lord Caitanya take the Srimad Bhagavatam as the primary pramana. And there's reasons why. I'll give two of amongst many. One primary reason is what the Puranas themselves say about the Bhagavad Purana. They say many things. Garuda Purana and Kurma Purana and Matsya Purana speak of the Bhagavad Purana as, you know, the superlative amongst them, the emperor amongst them all. It speaks of the Srimad Bhagavatam as the Amala Purana. There are Puranas, there are 18 principal Puranas, 6, 6, and 6. 18. And three are, especially for those in the mode of ignorance, those in the mode of passion, those in the mode of goodness. Pana Purana and Vishnu Purana are mode of goodness, Puranas. They're means of evidence. Amongst those 18, one of them is Amala Purana, unmixed with the modes, or Vishuddha Sattva. That's the Bhagavad Purana. There's one. So for that reason, Gaudiya Vaishnavas accept Srimad Bhagavatam is the topmost evidence. Another has to do with the description within Srimad Bhagavatam itself of how it was composed. All the Vedas, including the Puranas, were composed, and Vyasadeva was feeling insufficient. He was instructed by Narada to compose one literature that's just glorifying the personality of Godhead. So the Bhagavad Purana was composed on that basis. Thus satisfying Vyasa and satisfying the purpose of all the Vedas. And there's many other. The superlative position will come, it comes out certainly in Brahma Samhita. Let's do this one, one of the verses that's coming up. Govokanami Nijadami Tadecha Tasya Devi Maheshu Haridama Suteshu Teshu Te Te Prabhava Vivitas Vivitas Chena And it's describing the relative realms or dhammas or positions of existence, starting with Devi Dham, Mahesh Dham, Hari Dham, and Goloka Dham. So Goloka Dham is the residence of Govinda. Hari Dham is below Goloka Dham. It is the residence of Narayana. And Mahesh Dham is the residence of Mahesh, which is below Hari Dham, but above Devi Dham. So those are different realms or relative hierarchies of residences, of abodes. There's other acts, there's many other. So it why there are differences amongst the Vaishnavas, it has to do with which evidences, which scripture they principally take shelter of. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, certainly knowing these relative differences, made a major part of his work was seeing the similarities rather than the differences. And the similarities are, in essence, monotheism, as one supreme God, as opposed to other ideas. Some other appreciations. During Bhaktivinoda Thakur's time, when he was young, and Gaudiya Vaishnavism was not as prominent as he had made it. He didn't even hear of Lord Chaitanya until much later in his life. So he was reading many, because he was intellectual, many literatures. He wrote, "I like Christianity a lot because monotheism made much more sense to me than all these other things. Pantheism and impersonalism and Shakti worship and monotheism made much more sense." He liked it. There's another version depending on the scripture. So according to that scripture, there's this other notion. It's not exactly by name, Jehovah's Witnesses. That's who God is. He's Jehovah. I don't know about you guys with Narayan and Krishna, but Jehovah's, so based on the authority that they go to. Yes.
So if everybody has a different authority, right? Should it be all the scriptures telling the ultimate one single truth? Or the differences is due to the bhavas of the people who's trying to listen to that?
Well, kind of, but not exactly. For example, Bhagavad Gita, what does Krishna say about the bhava, or more specifically, the faith? He speaks of the faith of those who worship the devas. He says two things. He says that it's avidhi purvakam, it's done without proper understanding, it's actually worship meant for me. But because of their desire to worship in a particular way, I make their faith strong. Krishna is the source of that faith for those who worship a particular deva or many devas, many demigods. Krishna is the source of that. And he advises, don't disturb their faith. But we can elevate, on the other hand, just by glorification of Krishna. Then someone will ask, well, why are you glorifying Krishna? Why not everybody else? Well, here's some reason why we glorify Krishna. And not that we respect everyone, but we worship Krishna. We devote our everything to Krishna. And here's why. Because he's the source of everything. So it's not disrespecting. Anyway, okay.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. In the 10 avatars, the subavatar, generally Krishna is portrayed as one of the avatars, if we understand.
Krishna is what?
As portrayed as one of the avatars.
4 feet?
Portrayed.
Depicted.
I hear a lot of many voices, but not one.
Krishna is one of the avatars in the Dashavatar.
Okay, Krishna is one on the list.
Generally, he's depicted as one, but in the Dashavatara Stotra, it's Balaram is mentioned. And I understand Balaram is the direct expansion of Krishna. He's not an avatar, is he?
He's one of the avatars. He appears in this world. He's an avatar.
Okay, so is he a
Leela avatar? Why not? He performs Leela, he appears in this world.
I think the confusion was arising because Krishna is a protagonist during his pastime and Balaram is assisting in his pastime.
That's okay, that's the pastime. Why not? Yes!
Krishna Maharaj, so Buddha Dharma means empire to bear all the planets. If Krishna created the planets, why would he need the power to bear all them?
If Krishna creates planets, why does he have to build palaces?
Why does he need the power to bear them?
Oh, he doesn't.
But Buddha Dharma says, Buddha Dharma Shakti says, empowered to bear all.
Oh, he gives power to people, no problem. Would you like some devotional service? Where does the power to do that devotional service come from? Krishna! So Krishna doesn't have to have somebody do anything. He can just do everything. But he gives somebody some service. So would you like to hold up some planets? Yeah, sure. Here's the power to do it. Thank you. Some service for Krishna. Like that. Okay? Yeah.
How does Krishna decide in what bhava he wants a person to be?
How does he decide?
Yeah. Each
you
person,
have to ask him.
Each person has their own bhava towards Krishna, right? And how does Krishna decide that this person is going
to... He doesn't decide. It's like, you know, it's not exactly like, okay, let's have a little session where we're going to decide what everyone's bhava is. You can have this bhava. No, you shouldn't have that bhava. You should have another. No, maybe you should have a different one. I haven't made up my mind yet.
Is it dependent on...
It's not like that.
Is it dependent on a person's previous karma?
No. This is spiritual. It has nothing to do with karma. Bhava has nothing to do with karma. Bhava is spiritual. Look, here's a bag of marigold seeds. Okay? And, you know, I don't know until I sprout it. Maybe like a specialist horticulturist will know. But, you know, this one's a yellow one, that one's a orange one. This one's a small flower one, that's a medium flower one, that's a big flower one. Now, who decided that? It's kind of like what your question is. Well, you know, Krishna decided, you know, so what? On what basis does Krishna decide? Okay, you're a small one, you're a big one, you're a medium one. Well, you know, it's not like that. It's not like that. On the bhava platform, there's unlimited variety. And, you know, so we have a constitutional nature according to Krishna's arrangements. You know, you want to know what's the criterion Krishna uses for making his arrangements? You have to ask Krishna that one. It's unlimited variety. He doesn't pick one. It's just variety. Like, you know, like Radharani, well, I think I want a gopi assistant. Boom! There's one. Okay, maybe I need a couple more. Boom! Something like that. What criteria did you use for expanding this one down? It's not like that. There's variegatedness in the spiritual world. There's variegatedness amongst the living entities on their spiritual platform. You know, some by nature, it's part of Krishna's variegatedness in the spiritual world. Yeah. Come forward with the mic. Yeah. We're going to end. This will be our last question.
What else?
It's going to be a good one. Can it be a good one?
Probably a good one.
Okay.
One of the feelings we got after hearing this, seminar and with Brahma Samhita is that, at least I felt personally, that the attraction for Krishna as a person is hardly there in me. But I could see that by how you have described the Brahma Samhita here, that's what essentially it's seems to be about, attraction for Krishna as a person.
Yeah.
And I realized after
be practicing for so many years something, but that is not there. So,
well, there's layers and layers and layers of covering. We're really covered souls. You know, just start with Chaita Dharpana Marjana. You know, the mirror that's covered by dust. How thick is that dust? How many miles thick is the dust? 3 miles, 5 miles. Just keep cleansing. So, similar to what you're saying, the description of the cleansing that does take place, as it does take place, the heart becomes pure, and then these stimulations for ecstatic love, like the descriptions of Krishna's flute, and the sound of Krishna's flute, and what it does for Lord Brahma, what it does for the cows, what it does for the birds, what it does for the river Jamuna, etc., with the cowherd boys, the descriptions of these stimulations of ecstatic love, or the description of every year we have this for 1 month we have the Damodar Leela, and it can be just like a routine or like a vrata that we do, but as that cleansing takes place, besides just the vow of offering the lamp and singing the prayers, if one enters into the spirit of the prayers, they're very beautiful prayers. And there's actually, it's part of ragatmika bhakti to meditate on. Who has the microphone? Meditate on the flowers in Mother Jasoda's hair, and the dress of Mother Jasoda, and the belt around her waist, and all these details. And details become part of this very advanced stage of bhakti. They stimulate ecstatic love in a very personal way towards a particular type of love for Krishna. So it's purifying or purifying or purifying, depending upon our position. However many layers we ought to remove, there's a whole bunch more. So the appreciation that this is all about Krishna as a person, then there's the details of his blooming eyes like lotus petals, heavy deck with peacock. It's stimulations for ecstatic love. Shamanga tribangalitam lalita prakasham. He's standing in a certain form, and his complexion is a certain complexion, and all these details. Radharani, she just sees a cloud in the sky. She goes into ecstatic mood of love for Krishna because of the resemblance of the color of the cloud in Krishna. Yeah, it's very personal. And these higher stages of devotion, we touched on them. We're going to move quickly to other section now, and then whole other section. Thank you for that sharing. This is about a loving relationship and awakening the desire to be situated in our loving relationship is where we want to go. And when that awakens, it becomes explosive. Stuff that's in the way gets out of the way because the desire for loving Krishna in ecstatic mood, everything else pales. The attraction, some devotees have shared, the attraction for matter is very strong, but the attraction for matter pales when ecstatic love for Krishna starts to awaken. It's no longer just a struggle against it's the attraction for indulging in material happiness and the attraction for Krishna. there's no comparison. So for our position is sadhana. We do because it's good for us. It cleanses us, makes us pure, makes us more fit to be ignited in the ecstatic love for Krishna position and continuing to indulge in or fall prey to the allure of material involvement. Asat Krishna in Sanskrit. Thirst for the temporary. Black Friday. I heard some of our devotees win.
Nobody went,
Maharaj. Nobody went. Nobody went. I'll tell you a little secret. Okay, thank you all very much. We'll see you all tomorrow morning. Srila Prabhupada ki. Jai. Sri Brahma Samhita ki.
Jai.
Book distribution announcement ki.
Jai.